Greetings, everyone. I am your host, Jason Miles, and welcome to another episode of This is Revolution Podcast. So glad to have you guys with us live, and of course, happy to have the people that will be checking this out later on audio-only formats or a rewatch. Before we start, if you're new to the channel, please hit that like button, hit subscribe, and the notification bell so you're alerted whenever we go live. We're constantly adding new shows and doing cross streams with other channels. Earlier this week, we had a great talk with author Patrick Roussel to discuss the creation of the modern shopping mall in post-World War II Cold War America. And just yesterday on White Guy Wednesday, Gene Bajelon welcomed Sublation Media founder Doug Lane on the show to discuss free speech and state censorship. After that show, Gene took questions from the audience. It was another great episode. Speaking of the elder Bajelon, we're going to have his younger brother on this Saturday to discuss the dark side of wrestling. Yes, Gene Bajelon's younger brother is a pro wrestler in the UK. Dara Diablo is his name. So it's going to be a good time. We're going to talk about the nitty gritty of pro wrestling. And of course, if all goes well, cross your fingers, we can play some clips from the Kayfabe documentary that we've been working on for the better part of a year. Like I said, I went and watched the first draft and was totally blown away by it. So hoping that we can get just a little snippet so you guys can see what we've been working on and why I'm so excited to put it out. But we'll talk more about how we're going to put it out later. Thank you to all the subscribers on YouTube and Twitch and all the other audio-only podcast formats where you can find us. Also, thank you to our patrons. Collectively, you are all the fuel in the engine that keeps TIR moving along. So if you're enjoying what we do here and want access to the post-show call-in segment Champagne Room, be part of the live studio audience for the Pascal Robert Mile Mile Hour, and join us for movie nights. There's only one way: become a patron for as little as $3 a month or $30 for the year. It can all be yours. That being said, let's bring in the crew tonight. First of all, let's welcome my homie, my dog, the man of the Mile Mile Hour. You might have seen him on a clip from the Katie Halper Show. She just recently cut a clip of our appearance there a few months ago. Please welcome the Pascal Robert.
Peace and greetings to the chat. Peace and greetings to the audience. Peace and greetings, Jason Miles.
It's a hot one here in Mexico.
The whole planet, man. The whole planet.
Well, was it last time we talked? It was raining by you. Is it still storming by you or no?
No, it's not raining today. It was kind of warm today, but it's been kind of hot.
Well, you are in South Florida.
That's what I say.
Speaking of something hot, she is the faceless voice of reason. She has to hear all of our complaints and yours. She is the M2 Song.
Hello, hello.
Let's bring you on the screen, little Missy.
There we are.
The double applause. Can't just not be on the screen. How are you?
Feel like a cat on a hot tin roof.
Uh-oh, because you got your hair done. Came back from the dentist. There's a lot going on right now with you.
There's a lot going on with me.
You're just, I'm coming up. Is that how you're just walking around New York right now?
That's right. I'm throwing my hat up at every corner like Mary Tyler Moore.
I thought you were going to be more like Diane Carroll. What was the show she was in, Pascal? Diane Carroll show.
Oh my God.
What was the name of that show? Someone knows. There's got to be someone black watching the show right now, please.
She was a nurse. She played a nurse in that show.
God. And you know what? Our guest doesn't know. Mac, but get off quick. Mac is right now on Google trying to act like he knew it all along.
She was in the movie Claudine.
Claudine, yeah. Timothy says Claudine. That was the movie, but there was a TV show she was in. And I don't want to say a messed up name because it was a pretty normal name. What was it?
The Diane Carroll Show.
No.
No. Someone will tell us.
No, it had a name. It wasn't Wanda.
She was on Dynasty in the 80s.
She was on Dynasty.
Julia?
Julia! Julia,
that's right.
There you go. Did you guess Julia. That? Or did
no,
you...
that was in the chat.
Okay.
Dallas Dansa 54.
Did Dansa 54 know that off the top of their head, or do they cheat? I want to know if you guys cheated. Just be honest.
I don't know. Dallas Dan.
You have to be honest. The person is a being. I don't know.
Dallas in the room. Dallas.
Mouse in the room and the Pascal Body Jack Anthem are two of my favorite songs. I meant to put it on the soundboard because the last time Pascal was in the champagne room, we did the game of Jason Discovers How the Internet Works, where I played all those videos that I'd never seen before. And the kid with the drip, Pascal, your favorite person.
Yes.
Pull up in the black little spray. That was a good time. That was a good time. And also, just thank you to all the callers from Tuesday that called in for the champagne room.
Yeah,
I haven't done one of those alone in a long time. So it was a good time, and I'm glad you guys enjoyed the show. On the creation of the malls, we talked about central planning, the anti-communism of the Cold War. It was a good show. So I hope you guys read that article. Tucson, are you moving a table? Or
moving a table? No.
She sounds like she's got a blowtorch on. She's like,
yeah. Oh, it's a hair. It's a blow dryer.
You stop it.
She had her hair done. Yeah, she's just being fabulous all the time.
That's are you serious? Can you hear it the whole time?
Yeah, we can hear it blow dry your hair the whole time.
Afro, man. Like,
yeah.
It's like...
Oh, no, Pascal, she got it straightened.
Oh, where she got
you didn't see perm? It? Oh, yeah.
I sold out.
She sold out.
You got a tone perm, man?
Oh, yeah.
No, not a perm. Just a blowout. Silk press.
That's why she's walking around New York just flipping her hair wherever she can.
Oh, that's what's going on.
Ordering like 5 lattes at a time just so she can just flip her hair. Just. Well, on to something more depressing. Maybe a story not too many people talk about, but since I've met this man, he's been telling me about this project, and I'm really glad to have him on the show to talk about it. The moment he emailed it to me, I said, we got to get you on the show. And everything worked out to get him on today. We don't hear much talk about the 20-year war in Afghanistan, even after the damning Afghanistan papers were published, mainly because it is a bipartisan failure of U.S. empire that doesn't really play well for the 24/7 spin cycle that is mainstream media. And since so many programs, even in this independent space, are just commenting on CNN or Fox, or in some cases, commenting on other podcasts that comment on CNN or Fox, there weren't too many people that wanted to discuss what happened there. Well, today we're going to have my Beyond the Red Zone co-host, friend, and iHeartRadio podcaster, Michael McGinnis, aka Mac, to talk about not just his time serving in Afghanistan, but the brutal, violent war criminal Robert Bales. Just a warning, the topic today is grim and it is graphic. Mac spent 16 years in the armed forces and was very close to this extremely disgusting tragedy. And before I bring him in, I do want to play a snippet of his show. So I think I queued it up where we won't get commercials. You guys ready?
Yes, yes.
Of sort of that image that we think about when we hear war criminal. I just think Bales is a murderer. I think he's a mass murderer during wartime.
In 2012 and 2013, Lieutenant Colonel Jay Morse prosecuted Robert Bales on behalf of the United States military.
I had peers who asked me why I didn't charge it as a war crime. And my simple answer was, I don't need to. I have all the tools I need at my disposal to prosecute this guy. I really thought about what I wanted this to look like when it was done. And so I have all my notes, like I kept a journal for a while. And so I wrote down, I want a conviction 100% playing by the rules. Number two was that I wanted the victims to be satisfied or at least understand our process. I didn't want the public to think these were just a bunch of backwards brown people from the sticks. I wanted them to understand that these were families, that these were little girls and little boys, that these were farmers. I wanted to understand that these people were human beings.
Previously on The War Within.
They flew me out of Panjway, and then I ended up here in Leavenworth, Kansas. I really just wanted to see my kids again, you know?
We wanted to get John Henry Brown involved because he's really good with the media.
Carrie was scared of family.
Sorry about that. It skipped ahead. Wanted to play the first episode so you get kind of a gist of what they talk about. But since Mac did this on iHeartRadio, I don't really like navigating the app. But please welcome my good friend and co-host, Michael McGinnis.
What's up, man?
I wish you would have done it on any other platform other than that.
Yeah, guess what, man? I didn't have a choice. The documentary I was in about, you know, the war crime that my PO did was Paul Pawlowski and Dave Check. And if you don't know who they are, they were like, Dave worked for the NBA on the TV side for like 20 years. And Paul did like five Olympics. Okay. You know, so they're pretty big into sports. So when they did Leavenworth, like they kind of, I don't want to say they shifted focus, but it gave them kind of like their foot in the door to, I mean, I hate to say it, into like the heavier side of the military, you know, not the hero, the veneration of our veterans, that type of shit that you see so much of, especially in movies like, you know, The Lone Survivor, An American Sniper, Black Hawk Down, all those other, like, I mean, it's propaganda, you know, Top Gun, the second Top Gun. Yeah. Let's face it. That was a walking, talking recruitment pitch to America's.
Well, you know the joke that Cuba tells about that, right? And I'd actually, someone at his wedding, I actually asked the person at his wedding, was it true? One of the consulting jobs he had was for recruitment for the Air Force. And after they had this huge presentation, you know, data, months and months of data collection on why people are leaving. Basically, it was, why can't we retain people? They looked at all this information, how to make things cost effective. They looked at it and they said, some big general said, we'll just make another Top Gun.
I wouldn't be surprised.
That was before the Top Gun got released.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, like the DOD knows that they are going to have an uptick in any film or television project that they attach themselves to. And Riv, my shirt says all labor is skilled labor.
Even so. Child labor.
Nah. No.
Tiny fingers. They can really get some details. Hey,
tiny fingers.
I mean, the sad thing is we joke about it now, but there are currently 28 states that have legislation pending to drop the legal age for working down to like 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm. They're tired of the news stories. If they're just in there working, it's like there's no news stories.
Yeah. But, you know, they like Black Hawk Down was released just before 9/11, right? Or just after 9/11. So, like, it helped in that big, huge influx of people, you know, to come in, right? And what people don't realize about Black Hawk Down, like Grimes, Ewan McGregor's character, had his name changed because the DOD said, listen, you can't use this person's name because the person's real name just got convicted of molesting and raping his stepdaughter.
Yikes!
So, you know, it's the DoD kind of works overtime to separate, you know, all the nasty shit soldiers, sailors, Marine, airmen, and now guardians because of the fucking Space Force, you know, do. So, you know, when you get down to, you know, what happened in Afghanistan and what has been happening, especially in Iraq, when you look at like Abu Ghraib, you have, you know, the Matthew Goldstein, who I don't know if you remember his crimes. He murdered an Iraqi, buried the body, essentially snitched on himself to an FBI and CIA investigator, and ended up going to dig it up and burn it. And it, you know, the same, in the same day that Clint Lawrence, who was my former platoon leader, was pardoned by Trump. So was Matthew Goldstein, as well as Eddie Gallagher. So, you know, this, I think this leads back into, a much larger problem. And that, you know, you really saw this veneration of service members and veterans after 9/11, but it leads to people like Eddie Gallagher and Matthew Goldstein and Clint Lawrence, and a couple, you know, Blackwater contractors being pardoned, and everybody thought it was a great idea, you know, because they're heroes, and somehow they turned it around on, you know, Obama, because he instituted a very restrictive ROE, and I'm going to tell you, rules of engagement. So essentially, the way that I broke it down to some of my soldiers, and believe it or not, I had soldiers who could not read.
I believe.
Was if you feel a threat to your life, limb, or eyesight, but you need to ensure that whatever you're shooting at is armed, because once you, you know, once you pull the trigger and that round leaves the barrel, you can't bring it back. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is I really stressed doing the right thing and making sure that we, you know, took the fight to the enemy and not the people, because the people didn't want us there, and they did sure in the hell didn't deserve to have American you know, missiles fired from drones, or, you know, air to ground missiles fired by fixed wing aircraft, you know, such as jets or rotary wing aircraft, like Apache attack helicopters, like shooting up their villages. And they sure in the hell didn't need dickheads like me, who, you know, are walking through their fields that they're just trying to plant so they can, one, feed their family, and two, maybe make a couple extra bucks, you know, to just survive, you know, walking through their fields and then having some dickhead that's associated with me, you know, firing at them. So like, I really stressed strict adherence to the rules of engagement. And, you know, we actually did a very good job before Clint Lawrence got there. You know, we didn't have a civilian casualty incident. We worked well. We started, you know, we were down in the southern part of Afghanistan, which is very pro-Taliban, that, you know, that's where they came from. And, you know, we had them coming up to our little base and, you know, trying to work with us, giving us little snippets of information. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize, like, you know, vets don't need to be venerated. What I did was I went and did a job because I needed one, right? And then I stayed in as long as I did because I unfortunately had an aptitude for warfare. And that's not something to be proud of. That's not something to like bang your chest about. If you're good at war, that's not a good thing. It's really not.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. And again, for new viewers of the show, thank you guys for tuning in. Today's topic is going to be a little graphic. So for those that have maybe certain aversions to hearing very, very violent stories, as Mac and I and Pascal are very blunt people, I just want to send that, I guess, trigger warning out. You enlisted and you served 16 years.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about Robert Bales, who is the key figure of your 14-part series on iHeartRadio?
Yeah, Robert Bales enlisted after 9/11. Now, he's from, unfortunately, he's from Ohio.
Not the same side as you.
No, he was more southern Ohio, and that's just northern Kentucky.
Like, yeah, he's from like Cincinnati it. Area.
Yeah, outside that way. Yeah. And he went into financial advising and lost several million dollars, which wiped out people's retirement funds. And he caught, you know, he caught a ban. He lost his like brokerage license. You know, he had just gotten married not too long before that. He needed to get a job. So he joins the military, right? And he goes into the infantry and, you know, he spends his time mechanized, right? Which he essentially, that means he drove around in vehicles, would dismount and go do his job. Now, you know, like I was saying while we were off air, you know, if you've read anything about this, his legal defense leans into this word elite, right? And we do have elite soldiers. They're like special forces. They're Delta Force. They're combat controllers for the Air Force, Marine Force, Recon, like special operations guys, right? That's elite. Robert Bales just had a CIB. So he was just a basic ass infantry guy. But because of his service in Iraq, and then he did his first three tours there, and then did one in Afghanistan where he committed his crimes. You know, so his defense also makes up, they made up a stat that he's one of the most deployed soldiers in military history since World War II. But what they don't tell you is, like, in World War II, like, if I'm a paratrooper, I jumped into Normandy in 44 and didn't leave until the following year, right? Year and a half. Like, there was no going home. You got rotated off the line for a few days, and then you went and froze your dick off in Bastogne, right? Like, there wasn't a real break. Now, with us, you know, we would go for a year and then come back for a year, maybe 18 months, depending on what kind of unit you were in. You know, like, he didn't deploy any more than me or a couple of my buddies, and there sure in the hell is going to be more people on the special operations side that have deployed way more than this dude did. But they make a lot of hay out of that, you know. But he did most of his time in Iraq. You know, he was blown up a few times, you know. And when he gets back after his last tour in Iraq, you know, we're, you know, it's 2012. We're really pushing Afghanistan again after ignoring it for what, 10 years. And so everybody's going, everybody. And now we have to understand, as Robert Bales was in the 2nd Infantry Division, and the rotation before that, I pushed out 2ID because Jeremy Morlock and a crew from 2nd Infantry decided they would kill civilians, cut their ears off, take trophies.
Oh, yeah. Vietnam style.
Yeah. And the thing is we, me and the 82nd, we pushed them out after they had, at this point, they had started beating up the whistleblower, like the poor kid that blew the whistle on it, who called his father and told him, essentially a squad leader and two other team leaders decided to beat the shit out of him, called him a snitch, and he still ended up doing time.
Wow.
Whatever fucking reason. But Morlock, you know, we pushed his unit out there. So when on this 2012 deployment, we get shifted from one base to another, and they're like, yeah, man, we're pushing out 2ID. And I was like, fucking again? Why do they keep sending them back here? Because Afghans don't know how to read English, but you know what? They recognize the fucking unit patches, man. Right? So they see 2ID, which is, it's this big shield with an Indian, a native head on it, right? And, you know, they know they freaking can push them around. And they also know that we have to hit them harder because, you know, look at all the things that Morlock and his crew did. And then in March 2012, Bales left his base and went to two villages, Najabien and Alakozai, and killed 16 civilians, including 14 women and children.
It goes into a house and does it, right?
Yes, a couple houses. And you have to understand, in Afghanistan, what you have, what we call a kalat, which would be this giant walled kind of like series of smaller buildings where you had large extended families that stayed together, right? Mm-hmm. So like if you had a couple kids and, you know, your daughter was of marrying age, and that's a discussion for another day, everybody. So let's not immediately jump into that one, because you do see child brides in Afghanistan quite often. If your wife's now husband didn't have access to land or property, he would move into the clot with you, right? So you saw large extended families, you know, some 20, sometimes 30 people that lived in one clot. And the thing is we know that 16 was the number that they charged him with, because those are the bodies that they were able to recover. But Bales did set fire to a couple buildings, and he claims that he killed upwards of 20, maybe 22.
That's insane. Now, let me ask you this, and I'm sure Pascal and Toussaint have some questions to ask again. And I want to say, shout out, Charles. Thank you very much for giving us a large amount of foreign currency. Every penny counts. How common, when we think of war crimes, I think a lot of people leave it in the Vietnam, right? All the stuff that comes out during the 80s and late 70s that really shows kind of the broken Vietnam veteran, from first blood to platoon. So there's even a movie that kind of talks about the My Lai massacre. I can't think of the.
You talking about the one with like Michael J. Fox
and Sean Penn? Yeah. I can't think of the name of that off the top of my head. But this is really showing kind of the brutality of that conflict. And you don't really see it with this. How common was it for you to see soldiers do things like this? Is this guy really on an island, or is this a little more common than we'd like to talk about?
Before we even get into that, let's just think about the propagandization of the new film, television, in World War II, right? We see the newsreels, and what do they show? They literally show them carpet bombing places like Dresden. Mm-hmm. Well, Dresden was a war crime, man. I don't care how you wrap that up. That was mass bombing of civilian targets, right? But it was spun into it. And because you got to think, at this point, I think you only had like five big news agencies that had signed a federal deal to be able to run news on television, right? And for access to film like that, what do these news agencies do? They work with Department of Defense. So you're not going to hear about the huge amount of civilian casualties in Dresden in 1945, right? Korea, same thing. Early part of Vietnam, same thing. Now, when you get about 8 years in and you have Walter Cronkite on television talking about the evil that he and a lot of the other foreign war correspondents were publishing, it kind of turned things on its ear, right? And that's why, My Lai hit so big with William Calley. And then when you hit the late 70s, right, after we've pulled out the Vietnamization of the Vietnam War, the fall of Saigon, it isn't even just the movies in the 80s, Jason. You got to think PBS is airing documentaries where they're interviewing actual combat vets for the first time and getting no bullshit like assessments of what happened. You know, the Gulf War was fucking, I don't know how we showed that on television, because we had mass bombing of refugee caravans, streaming out of Baghdad, when we were making the push into there. And dude, when you look at our peacekeeping operations in the Balkans in 99, the 82nd had a senior NCO that raped a 13-year-old girl multiple times, and when she told her parents, he murdered her and stuck her in a freezer.
Jesus Christ.
You know? Yeah, and that barely got any play. So these things are not uncommon. You know, U.S. service members do shit like this, because how do we recruit, right? It's either a family business where you're going to get like third or fourth generation people, or you are getting people that live in economically underserved communities. You're getting people that live in food deserts. You're getting people that, like I said, I had soldiers who didn't know how to read. Mm-hmm. You know, so like you have, I don't want to say you're scraping the bottom of the barrel for some of these people, but that's honestly, that's what it is. So you're not always going to get the, you know, the most, the best representation or the best representatives, and shit like this is going to happen. Now, what does the U.S. military do though, is they bend over backwards to try and hide it, right? To make sure it doesn't really come out. And I think what really kind of spun these things on its ear was when you have people like Evan Wright, and I don't know if you guys know who Evan Wright is, but he's the dude who wrote Generation Kill, right?
Okay.
And if you watch
familiar with the book, yeah.
Yeah, and if you watch the miniseries on HBO, he's a reporter, right? You know, but he had Generation Kill out within 8 months of his return home. And he talked a lot about the killing of civilians in Iraq during the initial invasion. So you have reporters, you know, especially for, you know, I think what one Marine called a liberal rag, like Rolling Stone, because that's who Wright was writing for at the time, you know, reporting on what actually happened. And the thing is, nobody in that unit really pushed back on anything, you know, other than the officers. Some of the officers really pissed, moaned, and complained about it. But, you know, when you're a good reporter, you are writing things down, you're recording everything, you have everything to back up, you know, what you produced as a piece of work. So and with that being said, getting into modern day, I didn't see anything. I had really great groups of soldiers, and I actively stepped in when, you know, people would try and pull a trigger and try and shoot at somebody who was unarmed or did not pose a threat to our formation, you know. And I got called like a giant pussy and a bleeding heart. And I'm sorry, like for me, I have to wake up and look at myself in the mirror every day. And if I knew that I had my actions led to the loss of life of somebody who didn't deserve it. And I don't mean that in any vindictive way, but we're just talking in a mission oriented sense. Right. I wouldn't be able to live with myself, you know? And I think that's what really bothered me about my own experiences with Clinton Lawrence, is that he gave an order that I tried to stop that led to the deaths of two people that didn't pose a threat to the formation, that, you know, one was the village elder in the village we were trying to working in. And I'm like, dude, you know, Bales had already kind of set a negative groundwork in Regional Command South that affected the battle space I was working in. It was already hard enough as it is. And then this happened, you know? So, you know, it's shitty, you know? And that's the thing, is there are soldiers out there who just see them as Afghans and, you know, or Iraqis or whoever. You know, they don't hold their lives in the same as their own. Whereas for me, they're people just trying to make it through the day who have, you know, literally survived a war since 1979, straight through 1979, you know, until now. They haven't known peace in fucking forever. You know, and it's, I wanted them, you know, especially I wanted the Afghans to just be able to go about their business, point me in the right direction to where I can go and get, you know, Taliban, Al-Qaeda, you know. We were dealing with the early part of like ISIS in Afghanistan. Like there were so many moving pieces about, you know, who the DOD would call bad guys. And it was just point me at them so I can eliminate them so you can live your life.
So, which we find out through the Afghanistan papers that there's one higher up in Washington that literally asks one of the generals, so who's the bad guy? Because we didn't even know at a certain point who the bad guy was. Pascal, I'm sure you have a question
from that. Yeah, I'd like to know, first of all, why were we particularly, well, I mean Americans living in the States, why were we so anesthetized to the brutality of Afghanistan and Iraq in our consciousness, why did it seem like it was a war that we weren't paying attention to, or we didn't have to pay attention to? What was making that, what was facilitating the lack of consciousness of the sheer bloodshed in the body politic?
Well, I mean, honestly, Pascal, I would say this goes back to Vietnam, right? When we have a draft force, that conflict touched every single community in the United States, right? You had people whose number was called, and they went. You know, after Vietnam, you know, the idea of a drafted army is out of vogue. And, you know, we go to an all-volunteer force. So at this point, we don't have a very wide net that we are catching, you know, volunteers with. So, like I said, a lot of under-supported communities are putting a lot of kids into the military, right? Like, where are you going to see a recruiting office in California, Jason? You're not going to see it like on Rodeo
Drive. You're going to see where I grew up, actually. Yeah. Where I grew up, there was a recruiting office in there.
Yeah, you're not going to see them in San Francisco, but you're going to see it across the bridge in Oakland.
Yes.
You know, like, right. and that's how the military targets recruiting. And, you know, you're going to see, like, there's been articles in the last 6 months talking about, you know, we're going to go out and recruit America's best and brightest, and we're going to put a recruiting office in Manhattan, and we're going to put them in, you know, this part of Washington, D.C., and in San Francisco, and all these more affluent communities. And it's like, no, you're literally putting a PR office there, man. Like, you're not putting real recruiters there. But I think that's what it was. That's what it actually is, Pascal. We don't have nationwide skin in the game. We don't, right? It's like Congress is like, you know what? We're going to go to war, and we're going to send our all-volunteer force over there. And when you don't have things like rationing, and when you don't have things like, you know, the victory gardens in World War II, right, you don't have everybody pitching in to actively try and win it. What you do have, right, what you do have is a small percentage of the population, which is under, I think it's 1.4% now of the United States actually serves, and that is incorporating active component, reserve component, National Guard, right? That's all three components. It's 1.4%. And then all you have is Congress writing checks, right? Oh, well, we got to get this new flashy airplane, you know, the F-35. Doesn't fucking work. But you know what we're going to do? Spend tens of billions on development, building it just to watch it fucking crash into the ground, you know? And that's what we have now, you know? And the only people that get fired up about defense spending are who? Maybe one or two Democrats. Everybody else is just like, well, we need it. We got to be able to sell cluster bombs to Ukraine. We have to be able to arm this group, or, you know, build this installation in this country, you know, so we can flex military power there if we have to, you know? So like, I think that's the biggest thing, why nobody really gave a shit. They were not affected by the war, any of them, right? Whether it was Iraq, Syria, what do we call them? The continued military counterinsurgency operations in the Philippines, right? Like, people are not affected by it.
It's very true. Toussaint, I'm sure you have something you'd like to add.
People also don't see the pictures and the names, the caskets. They don't see any of those things either.
Anymore. There's a huge memorial where I'm from, in actually a very affluent city called Orinda, California. And they put it by the freeway, so it's like a grave site. They put a cross up. And I think at this point, it's... the cross represents so many soldiers. So many people that
I mean, isn't that the thing though? They recruit from poorer communities, but it's the rich communities that put the memorials up.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's honestly, yeah, that's how it is, right? You know, the nicer part of Fayetteville here has, you know, the Vietnam Memorial, the Global War on Terror Memorial, the Airborne Special Operations Museum, and literally right down the road are condos that run about $6,000 a month.
Jesus.
Right? Like, it's not, you know, you're not going to see that, like, back in Campbell Terrace, you know, which is the low-income housing, right? Even though there are a lot of people that live in Campbell Terrace that are in service, you know? So it's just like, none of this, it's somebody had mentioned the poverty draft, and that's exactly what we have. This is an easy way for the rich and powerful of the country to feed the poor into the meat grinder. And when we come out needing help or assistance, we're essentially told to go fuck ourselves because, you know, look at what just happened with the new budget. The VA had their budget slashed by 22%, you know, so that's eliminating people's ability to get the mental health they need, or even just like, you know, I've had two back surgeries. I've had two complete replacements of my ACL, my left knee, one on my right. I've had my eyeball detached. My body's held together with like two gum and a prayer.
And that's all after you got out when you were doing bear wrestling. For
I wish.
Bear wrestling.
Yeah. But, you know, like, and for me to just like get yoga paid for, which is great for my back, that doesn't involve a narcotic, you know, I have to go through 6 months of, you know, playing the please contact me VA because my benefits are almost running out and the yoga studio is going to want to get paid before they let me back in. So, you know, it's just, you know, talking to Marcus one time, Jason, you know, he said it was a form of population control by the powerful. We let the poor die. And that opens up spots for younger people to move up.
Jeez.
Well, let me ask you this. How is it for you talking about this? Because there are certainly veterans who function and cope without talking about what they've seen at all. It's kind of amazing to have a whole, you know, series of veterans talking about their experiences.
It's about an experience that's extremely traumatizing.
That too.
Yeah. I mean, after I got home in 2012, I spiraled really bad. And in 2014, I punched a lieutenant that was talking to me about the Lawrence thing that, you know, the Lawrence incident that happened, not realizing that I was the weapons squad leader in the platoon at the time. So I just hit him. And I got in trouble for that. And then one night I just couldn't deal with anything anymore. So I got rip roaring drunk. I drove on the post. I parked my car out by a drop zone and I had a gun in my mouth. And I lucked out and an MP was just patrolling in an SUV and stopping me. Dude stayed with me all night, still cited me for the DUI. but when I was having my administration separation board, he spoke on my behalf, right? But at that point, you know, I'm talking to this Army psychiatrist and she's like, do you really want help? Because a lot of your people, she said that meaning like infantry people, game the system by saying, I feel all this guilt. They get 100% VA rating when they get out, which is almost $4,000 a month, and they don't have to do anything, right? They can just kind of do what they want, right? I looked at her and said, if you put a 100-pound bag of jelly beans on the table and said, you have to eat all 100 pounds and you'll be cured and you'll feel better about yourself. I was like, I'm going to eat 100 fucking pounds of jelly beans because I can't walk around feeling like shit anymore. It's affecting my relationship with my friends, with my kids, with my family. And I was like, I don't want to live like this.
Jelly beans are gross too.
Yeah, I know. Nasty, right? So yeah. She put me in contact with this great doc, amazing doctor who was in the infantry himself. Like he started Vietnam out as a private. And in 1983, he retired as a full-bird colonel. And he stuck around in town just to, you know, help veterans get through all the shit that, you know, inevitably we're going to be dealing with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that it put me in a spot to where I could be comfortable to talk about it. Now, the documentary helped a lot. because it was the first time the guys in the platoon were able to get our side of the story out, because Lawrence and his defense team controlled everything. They were on Fox News. They were on Hannity, Tucker Carlson, Pete Hegseth, that little fucking douchey rat face fuck. you know, like, they had the narrative. So when the documentary team came out, that made it really easy, because I just unloaded everything, you know. And since then, even with people coming to my house threatening to kill me for being a traitor, you know, even with people like leaving me hour long voicemails, like heavy breathing into the fucking phone, like, you're such a rat piece of shit. You know, like, even with that, you know, I still open my mouth because it needs to be done, you know. And especially when Paul and Dave contacted me about doing the Bales project, I am a freelance journalist, and the last thing I wanted to do was kind of get like shoehorned into being the war crimes guy. But there's not a lot of people that have the operational experience to really understand everything about the story. So I just kind of threw myself into it. And what was really, what I wasn't prepped for at the beginning was going through all the evidence, right? Like seeing the pictures, reading the accounts. You know, you're really not ready to see a 9-month-old baby with a bullet wound in its head, you know? And, you know, I knew about Robert Bales, I read, you know, in the GQ article that was written about him. I knew about, you know, reading about him in Stars and Stripes and the Army Times and the aftermath of the trial. I didn't know, you know, the nitty gritty behind everything. And then, you know, when you see it, even after everything I've seen, and I've had my forearm in my buddy's leg holding on to his femoral artery so he didn't like bleed out. You know, like, I've done and seen some gross shit. You know, you're not really prepared to see whole families just murdered, you know.
And Bales is very so in the series. I definitely want people to check it out wherever you are listening or watching this show. There are links in the description to the Robert Bales story on iHeartRadio. You can get the iHeartRadio app and hear, I think the first four episodes are up right now.
Yeah, so the first four are up right now, and a new episode comes out every Thursday.
And it's 14 episodes long.
12 episodes.
12, I lied. There's 12 episodes. Well, Max is going to give you bonus features if you know it.
Yes. I will send you video where I'm running around in my Sears School Ranger panties with a labor tank top on.
Sign me up.
You know?
Pascal, I know you have some more questions to ask before we go.
I mean, the level to which this is disturbing is beyond words, only because, you know, it just demonstrates how much that we are divorced from understanding how the vicious cycle of the military-industrial complex just becomes a life of its own in our economy. Why do you think it's so bad for particularly those of us on the left who try to claim like we care about anti-imperialism to create the necessary imagery of what is happening in our military to the body politic to perhaps create the discussions necessary to kind of stop this type of military excesses?
Well, I mean, you know, Pascal, like, I'm sure you've seen it. And some groups on the left, you know, veterans are not welcome, you know, whatsoever. You know, even when I was in, you know, just trying to get into, you know, communist reading groups, you know, they were like, you're not welcome. Right. And even when you bring up the fact is that during the October Revolution, what was the largest group and most important group that helped take St. Petersburg? The Soldier and Sailor Soviet, like it was them. You know, so I think a lot of groups on the left need to open up a little more to veterans. Now, to the other part, Pascal, I think we really need to start really as leftists of any stripe, We need to really start leaning into, honestly, like, let's fight a little dirty. Start checking out congressional voting records, you know, and see who's voting for these huge weapons appropriations, right? Like, Lima, Ohio has a takeout plant, right, where they build Bradleys. The United States Army doesn't want any more Bradleys. Well, the rep there ensures that they pump out like 2,000 Bradleys a year that just go sit in a parking lot in the desert, and they never, ever get used, right? But it keeps constituents happy. Rather than shifting production to something else, which you can do that in factories, right? You know, shift production, build something else that's a needed product, and constituents will still keep their jobs. You know, so, you know, it's you know, we have to start really targeting and letting people know this person votes, you know, for war fighting measures. We need to start really attacking. And I don't mean that physically. OK, like, let's I don't want anybody getting arrested saying Max said to go burn this place down. But we have to start getting in the faces of recruiters. Like, I use pictures of my buddies that have lost limbs or been shot. You know, I took a picture when my eyeball was dangling out by the nerves. You know, there's a recruiter with his nice board and his business cards. And he's like, hey, man, do you want to join the Army and be a Ranger? And I'm like, yeah, if you do that, this is what you have to look forward to. And the kid's like, oh. And I was like, yeah, man, you know, like, and the recruiter's like, really, dude, you're a vet. I'm like, that is exactly why I'm showing kids this, mm-hmm. You know, we have to start chasing, you know, recruiters out of schools. And I don't give a fuck about No Child Left Behind. I really don't give a shit, man. That has to be challenged somehow, some way, whether through the court system, or you just showing up and being an asshole to recruiters, right? We need to eliminate ROTC units, get them off college campuses. You know, we need to make sure that, you know, we make it as hard as possible for the military to recruit and build the things they need to go wage war. And when we do that and it affects their ability to go wage war, war in parentheses, because like I said, the continued military counterinsurgency operations and the southern Philippines, you know, we have you know, we'll sit there and waste money on that, right? But would we be bothered to, I don't know, save 500,000 people in Rwanda in 94? No. You know, like, so we, if we're going to make it more difficult for them to wage the wars they want, you know, we have to, or if they want to deploy, we need to make sure that is pointed at a mission that's worthwhile by pressuring the dickheads that sit on Capitol Hill and supposedly represent us, you know? So like, I think it's part of the, you know, the activist part of being a leftist. We have to get out there. We have to get in. We have to get out there. We have to be active, and we have to be in their faces. Because that's exactly what the DOD would do to us.
I want to send a shout out. Kenzo Shabbat is watching the show. Good friend. Also. And for those that are asking if this is Mac's first time on the show, no, Mac actually hosts a show with me that I will take responsibility for not having on the air. It was me, Mac, and Marcus. And then Mac and I talking sports. I haven't had a chance to watch sports, brother.
Dude, I caught the USFL championship game because I'm back to working two jobs again, and it's just like I have no time. And when I do have spare time, I'm hanging out with my kids, and then I drag my ass to the gym, and then I'm making sure I'm reading at least a book.
I can tell that you're going to the gym, by the way.
Dude, I'm trying, man.
I can see.
I'm trying to get fit in case the thing happens because I don't want to just last a day or two. I'd like to make it. I'd like to make it a week.
The thing happens?
Revolution.
The thing.
Or a date. Yeah. Revolutionary date.
I thought you said a date.
Thought it was a date.
It's either or. Whichever comes first, revolution or a date. That's what
yeah. I mean, let's face it. That's not looking good here. Not looking good.
They're on the same schedule.
They are for all of us here at TBR.
Yeah.
Well, I won't speak for the two island people, two island black people. I won't speak for them. Oh, Lord of mercy.
Lord, that works with Marcus, not us.
All you people.
Pascal remains unfazed.
He was not on the Armenian show a few Saturdays ago.
Oh man, that is I love that topic. Like my I've Joe Kasabian's a friend of mine, and he does the Lions Led by Donkeys podcast. Mm-hmm. And he's Armenian, and he wrote the book Hooligans of Kandahar, which I highly recommend you guys read. Any book. And what I loved about it, what you see a lot in the global war on terror is books being published by like lieutenants, captains, colonels, mm-hmm. generals, officers, right? Joe was an E4. He was a corporal.
Listed, yeah.
You know, and he wrote this amazing book about what the war was really like. And it's fucking amazing. And he moved to Armenia last year. He went back to the motherland. So it was.
That's becoming popular. Yeah. Armenians moving back to the motherland.
Can you let him know that the Armenians are down?
Yeah.
And that bitch, what did she say about Caitlyn? What did she say, Toussaint?
She said, fuck Caitlyn. That's what she said.
You didn't see that episode Marcus was on, Mac?
No, I didn't.
We watched a video of a woman kind of losing her crap in a T-Mobile store. And for no reason, she walks in with her passport and she goes, I'm a federal agent. Pascal hasn't seen it.
Oh,
you know what?
The United States of America.
Yes.
Whoever's in charge is in charge. It's fine.
When you see the clip, and you see Marcus's face, every word she says, he looks more and more like amazed.
And see, I don't know how Marcus does that, because on left flank, he watches some of the most fucked up clips.
Yes.
All the time.
Yes.
And how he could be shocked by anything anybody says at this point.
Because I set him up by giving him the wrong show notes.
This is true.
B, he hadn't seen the clip and he had no idea no one knew what it was going to be. And the stuff that comes out of that woman's mouth, when she talks about the Armenians are down, we all lost it. And you see Marcus just go, what?
Wow.
And then she starts yelling at black people, calling them the N-word. She starts telling people to talk to certain rappers. You need to go talk to Offset.
Because all of us know who he is.
That's right.
She starts talking like the Toussaint called her a black Hebrew Israelite, because at one point she starts telling the black people that there's a $1.8 million in gold in Africa and they need to go get it. If they want to stay here, that's fine. But she says... she's got a niggas in heat on a roof.
What the hell?
She said all the things.
I kind of want to play it for Pascal. Is it wrong if I play it for Pascal?
Go ahead, play it.
Champagne room.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's best for...
for everybody.
For this not being pulled down for the purpose of monetization, for the purposes of the sanity of the whole podcast universe.
I gotta see Toussaint. We have to see Pascal's reaction to to the Armenians are down. Like, Mac, I have to see your reaction as well.
I'm gonna sit here and say this, right? Like, I mean, it's been bad the last couple of years. I think we can all agree on that, right? Like, white people are losing their shit everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, in the last like 5 months, I've seen the most like ethnically centered weird arguments, like Armenians are down, right? Like, Like, I heard somebody sent me one on Discord.
Like, what does that mean? Like, they're down like the stock market?
I was like, we don't know. We don't know if it's like they're down.
Like, they're cool. They're cool. In.
They're on a lower line of like longitude and latitude. Like, we don't really know.
She doesn't explain any. She obviously has been up for a few days. So there's misfiring in what she's trying to ask. But you know what? Let's go to the champagne room because I want to see your guys' reaction to this video. I had to cut clip. I cut like 3 or 4 clips from this show because it was like 3.5 hours long. Yeah. And every time I watched that moment, I laughed every time. Like every time. And I had to watch like 100 times and I kept laughing.
Dude. Like, it just, before we go, but like I saw like this Irish woman was losing her shit. Like, mm-hmm. She's like visiting or like on a visa and she's in like a Kroger's, man, like a grocery store. Like, screaming at this poor like associate who's like 17 years old. Like, she had like an earbud in and she's stocking. And this like Irish lady just comes out of fucking nowhere and just starts screaming at her. And the, like, I heard like, you know, one of the things I got from it, and I know she's from the West Coast of Ireland, because like you can't understand a fucking word she's saying, right? But she's like, "Oh, I know black people like pays," you know. And this poor girl like takes her earbud out, and she's like, "Ma'am, I haven't understood a word you said," right? And then she just puts the earbud in and goes back to like stocking, you know, just like completely ignoring her. And I'm like, one, this young lady is a fucking champ for just sitting there and just like dealing with it. I hope like she was listening to a really rad audiobook or something. You know, like
you hope it wasn't eat niggas ass. Eat niggas
ass. even if it was that, like, who gives a shit, you know? But like, but this, she just stood there for probably a good 5 minutes with this fucking Irish woman just losing her shit. And like, and it's not even just that. It's not like I said, it's not even just like this ethnically like based stuff. It's like the people losing their mind are also getting younger and younger. So it's not just like the 40-year-old, mid-40s Karen anymore.
Yeah.
It's like late teens Karen. And it's like, what do you have to bitch about right now? Right? If you're not bitching about the state of the economy, how your labor is being exploited, how your tax money is being misappropriated, and how you're just genuinely treated like shit, shut the fuck up. I don't care about the latte that you're wasting money at a union busting store on. Okay. Like, I don't care about that. Like, go, if you're going to get pissed off about something, get pissed off and work for something that matters and not how your coffee's screwed up, man. I'm sorry. I don't get it.
Look, man, that's where people draw the line. This is a bridge too far. I asked you to put 2 Splenda in here. This is Splendalous. How the fuck am I supposed to drink Splendalous beverage?
I asked $8 for almond milk. And this is real milk.
Well, that's a problem, though. That is a problem.
Because who? Ain't but nobody really got, what do you call it? Lactose. There's nobody.
But most people are lactose intolerant. Like,
most people just fart, and then they get all weird about it. It's okay.
Dude, Jason, my son, lactose intolerant. Like, that kid's like, "Dad, I'm never getting a milkshake again." And I was like, "What happened, dude?" And then he goes on, because he's 12 and he's a boy. He's like, "Bro, it was rough, man." And I was like, "I don't want to hear it." I was like, "I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it." He goes, "Dad, evil came out of me." And I was like, "Oh, okay. I'm done. I don't want to hear it."
Somebody said their dad faints if he drinks milk. He's beyond lactose intolerance. He turns into a southern dandy when he drinks milk. I declare. This is not nut juice. I declare.
I declare I have got the vapors.
Well, Mac, hey, thank you so much for coming on. The Robert Bales story, iHeartRadio. A new episode drops every Thursday. Please check it out. Write a positive review. It's done so well. Mac's been talking about this for the 2 years that I've known you.
Yep.
You've been telling me about this thing. You guys have been conducting interviews for years. It sounds so great. It's so compelling.
Yes.
A word Tucson used.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I wanted to make sure, because I cannot stand Robert Bales or the fact that he is seeking some kind of clemency for what he did. And he is. He's actively still seeking it. You know, and I'm not going to get into the details because if you'd like to know, like Jason said, okay. You know, for me as an NCO, I didn't use steroids. I didn't drink booze in theater. And he copped doing it on that deployment. And if you did it on one, you probably did it on all of them. So he absolutely was a rule breaker who didn't enforce proper standards. I mean, and honestly, look at what he did as a civilian, defrauding people out of a couple million dollars. You know, like he's not a good person. And which, I mean, this quick little side note, I did every interview except three. I didn't get to interview Robert Bales, his wife, or Mark Edwards. And Jason, that might name might sound a little familiar to you. He played football with Robert Bales and ended up going to play fullback for the San Francisco 49ers for a few years.
Oh, I do remember that cat.
Yeah, but I could not interview them because Bales said not just no, but fuck no. My buddy Clint Lawrence, you know, Max spoke out against him, so I will not speak to him. But I did every other interview. So, but I think me and my producer, Max, we've done a pretty good job so far. And this has been a four-person thing the entire 2 years. So, I mean, it's not hard physically, but goddamn, it was 2 years of hard work to get this thing out. I hope everybody, as grim as the subject matter is, genuinely learned something and enjoys it and realizes why we need to talk about these crimes and keep them out in front of the American people. So like Pascal said, people are aware of what happens when America makes the decision to go dropping bombs and shooting people overseas.
That is Michael McGinnis, Mac, my co-host on Beyond the Red Zone, which we're still trying to get back in action. Again, I'll take the responsibility for that. We're going to go straight to the champagne room. Let's hang out. Let's have Pascal and Mac watch my favorite video. And I have some more videos for them to watch of things that I have found on the internet. Mac, I think we should change the sports show to just us watching the Street Beefs Network and breakdown of shitty fights. So thank you guys. And we are
out.
Out.
Peace.